Morning, it's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we've got an action-packed show for you today. Going to catch you up on the latest and the greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, folks, it's come down to two races left in Formula One, and they are going to be racing in Qatar today, so we'll have those results for you next weekend. But we'll talk a little bit about what's going on with the fight between three different drivers. We also will catch you up on a truck that's coming to Barrett-Jackson that's very interesting. Also talk about what's going on with the NASCAR lawsuit. I've got some weird and unusual news about a Mercedes-Benz and a former Olympian snow skier. And then a story about the wave. And we'll talk more about that. And of course, we'll talk a little bit about what's going on with gas prices. And of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Well, Formula One is in Qatar in the Middle East, and what's going on right now is we have three drivers, Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri, and Max Verstappen, in a virtual three-way tie for the Formula One championship. Max Verstappen, who is in third place with 371 points, Oscar Piastri with 374, and Lando Norris with 396. All three of these drivers have an opportunity to win the Formula One World Championship. Yesterday, we had the sprint race, which is a short 19-lap race, which they added a couple of years ago. There's about a half a dozen of these each year. I don't know exactly why and how they choose the tracks they do, but I can tell you this, it was a really boring race. There was no passing, and good news for the McLaren fans, Oscar Piastri won, and he has collected points for that. And looking at 8 points he was collected. And he also is sitting on the pole for today's race. So we'll see if the McLaren fans will be rewarded, or is it a situation where Max Verstappen, potentially the best driver ever to drive in Formula One, is going to win the race and go on and try to win another Formula One championship. Information and details on this race today. The headline from Racer Magazine says, "The first turn could make or break the title." Well, there was huge excitement and anticipation after the Las Vegas Grand Prix, with the disqualification of both the McLaren cars bringing Max Verstappen closer to the championship lead and increasing the chances of a final race showdown. Now, I'll admit, I was one of those who was energized by the idea of a three-way fight into Abu Dhabi and the additional jeopardy injected into the Qatar race weekend as Formula One tackles a brutal triple header to end the season. We'll also admit that I was slightly carried away at first because, in reality, Lando Norris still had and has a huge opportunity to become world champion there on Sunday night. Norris did his part of what he needed to do, securing third place in the sprint race. A top seven finish would have been enough. Those points will guarantee that the title fight remains in his hands this weekend. But, a win at Qatar and win at the Qatar Tournament, and Norris could be the champion. Now, I was fortunate enough to ask and interview Norris as he was walking to his car before the sprint race and asked him about the permutations and the facts of going forward for this short race to help set up a title chance. The pause he took before responding felt like an eternity, as if he was computing the scenario before pushing it back into his mind and stating his sole focus of making a good start, an attitude that Norris has maintained as he lines up in second place on Sunday, needing one spot to guarantee the championship to himself. Well, it's a long run into turn one, and it's a good opportunity for anyone to gain or lose positions, Norris said. Apart from that, I think it's going to be a pretty boring and straightforward race. My approach is the same as it is every day. I'm second, so there's not a whole chance for me to win in a minute. I'm just going to try to focus and get a good start, and that's it. Well, Oscar Piastri did his part of that job as well as the driver. He needs to overtake Norris if he's going to win the championship. Piastri entered the weekend 24 points behind and seemingly the largest outsider in the title picture because he hasn't had a top three finish in any race or sprint race since the end of the European part of the season. He has not outscored Norris in any session since Zandvoort, and the momentum did not appear to be on his side. Yet, from the start of free practice one, he seemed very comfortable with the McLaren, turning the sprint pole into his third consecutive sprint pole at the track, following up what he did his first pole in August. Quote, I felt everything was good this weekend. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's really good. The team did a great job. A little bit of a question mark on which tires to use. I did a quick lap in qualifying two and threw a bit of spanner in because we didn't expect to be so good. But in Q3, it was really good with a new set of tires. Very happy. Now, like Norris, Piastri knows the crucial part of the race is that turn, that race into turn one. The launch he gets off the line and maintain the lead into turn one is the biggest obstacle. I think today the start is the biggest advantage I'll need to do tomorrow. What I saw today, there's clean air, a massive amount of advantage there with the big stint lengths. It's going to be a pretty fast race, and probably the biggest thing is to get it right in that first turn. Perhaps playing into Piastri's hands, however, is the 360-degree view Norris needs to take, not figuratively, but as the championship leader, arguably his the most to lose, literally with the cars directly in front and behind him. So it's going to be a very, very exciting start to this race, and I look forward to catching that and giving you the results next weekend. But who is going to win this championship? And I love the fact that there is a three-way battle, and I think it's going to go all the way to the last race. Well, from the pages of Old Car Weekly, this is the scoop. Barrett Jackson fall auction tops $40 million. Well, Barrett Jackson sold 643 collectible vehicles for more than $38.8 million with a 100% sell-through at its fall auction in Scottsdale on October 15th through the 18th at Westworld. In addition, 449 pieces of authentic automobile memorabilia was sold at $1.4 million, bringing the total auction sales to over $40 million. Now, the top three Ford sellers were Ford Supercars, a 2006 Ford GT Heritage Edition number 3, $742,000, a 2006 Ford GT, $660,000, and a 2021 Ford GT Mark II sold for $605,000. Now, rounding out the top five was a 1976 Ford Bronco custom SUV that sold for $440,000, and a 68 Ford Mustang Eleanor 25th Limited Edition sold for $429,000. And the 2026 Scottsdale auction will be held at Westworld again, January 17th through the 25th. And for more information, head over to Barrett-Jackson.com for more information. Well, from the pages of The Drive, a 1971 Chevy Dream Truck packs a 10.4-liter V8 under the hood, and it's headed to auction. Well, if you see an old GM pickup truck, you automatically assume it has a 350 small block. Well, you'd have to guess again on this one. It's a 1971 Chevy K10, and no, it doesn't have an LS or even a 454 big block. Instead, it's got a honking 632 cubic inch V8 crate motor, thanks to the guys at JPS Customs and this Cheyenne Super Custom, into an absolute dream build. And the crowd's going to get an opportunity to hear this thing go thumpity-thumpity-thunk across the auction block as it comes to Barrett Jackson in January. The 10.4-liter GM motor is rated at an astounding 1,004 horsepower and 876 pounds of foot torque. And this does this without any additional power adders like a turbocharger or a supercharger. And this goes along with the old adage, which I usually disagree with, but in this case, there is no replacement for displacement. Now, the V8 sits smoothly like a crown jewel in its with its orange valve covers and its high-rise intake. There's a lot of artistic expression going on here, or you would prefer the term craftsmanship. Either way, the guys over at JPS were intentional every step. The Stainless Works headers, the mandrel bent 3-inch Borla exhaust system, and everything that goes around. With this engine being so rowdy, the rest of the truck, well, has to be up to snuff too. The JPS folks opted for a 4L80 transmission from Hughes Performance, which by the way is here in Phoenix, Arizona, and sends an output through a 2-speed Atlas transfer case, Tom Wood drive shafts, and a Roadster Shop chassis, when that's the frame on the vehicle, RS4 chassis. Just the chassis itself is over $44,000. Got Fox suspension on this, and this baby is gorgeous. The K10 styling speaks for itself. Not only the truck wears a two-tone black and white paint job with a lot of polishing, the interior is a sharp chocolate-colored factory-look wood grain dash with an awesome patina. Not to mention the vintage air AC, everything you'd always want to have in a truck. And I'm looking at pictures of this thing, and it is gorgeous. Now, I can't even imagine to think how much this Chevy will sell for. Although it's worth noting, and no reserve prices on it right now, I imagine it'll be north of $200,000 simply because of the quality and it's turnkey ready for someone who would like to have fun. If you'd like to spend a lot of time or clearly a lot of money to recreate one of these on your own, or you could just go buy it at Barrett Jackson in January. And I can tell you, as a guy who has a part-time job working at a classic car restoration shop, the amount of money it would take to build this truck, if you brought that to someone like us, is well north of $200,000, considering all the cool parts. That engine probably is almost $40,000, $30,000 on its own, so $75,000 just in a chassis and an engine. I can't wait to see what this truck sells for in January. For many folks, there's a lot of trouble going on in NASCAR. There's a lawsuit that's going to trial, and that is going to start next week. So I'm going to spend a little bit more time next weekend talking a little bit about, or a lot about, what this lawsuit is. But I did want to talk a little bit about one of the articles that came out this week. And it from the website Motorsports, it says NASCAR wanted to put a knife into the trash SRX series amid the charter negotiations. Well, there were countless emails and messages and documents unsealed as a part of the buildup to the 2311 Racing and Front Row Motorsports versus NASCAR lawsuit set to begin on December 1st. Including those were from Commissioner and then President Steve Phelps, telling then-President Steve O'Donnell that they needed to put a knife to this trash series in reference to the SRX series when they realized that Denny Hamlin had agreed to run in the season opener that Sunday. Let me go look at some of this stuff. The headline says, SRX has signed Denny Hamlin to do a one-off appearance in the summer series where he will compete at the Staffordshire Motor Speedway in July, and Denny Hamlin said, absolutely fired up to join the season opener at Stafford. Now, at the time, the Superstar Racing Experience, that's what's called the SRX, was heading into its third season and a first time on ESPN on a Thursday night after a two-year run on CBS on Saturday nights. The date allowed for a greater participation by active cup drivers that drew the ire of leadership in NASCAR. SRX was founded by Tony Stewart, Ray Evraham, George Pinn, and Sandy Montag. Evraham left the group at the end of the 21 season. The text messages revealed a part of the unsealing of the documents that were from the lawsuit. Steve Phelps, oh great, another owner in SRX. O'Donnell, this is NASCAR, plain and simple. Enough. We need legal to take a shot at this. Phelps, these guys are just plain stupid. We need to put a knife to this trash series. Well, the insinuation in this exchange is presumably that SRX was infringing on NASCAR's intellectual property by using its current drivers. Now, the summer before, Trackhouse owner, racing owner Justin Marks also made a start in the SRX Staffordshire Motor Speedway and generated conversation from NASCAR leadership over the series' threat of operating within a nationally televised stock car racing space. These texts were from June of 2022 and also were unsealed and read through the context of the charter negotiations as it just started to brew, but Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Marks eventually purchased the Cars Tour. O'Donnell, Justin Marks is racing in SRX? Yeah, from Ben Kennedy. Yeah, I saw that too. Disappointing. This is an unknown person in the text chain. Well, they just don't get it. I'm sure it's cool for Justin to go out there and get behind the wheel, but there's no regard for the bigger picture. And maybe that's on us for not giving them an incentive. I don't know. But you've got Marks, Chase Elliott, Tony Stewart, Ryan Blaney, racing on network that competes against our rights holders. They outrated our shows for the Xfinity and the trucks last weekend. This isn't just some local track dirt stuff. O'Donnell. Actually, they have one of the voices of Fox in Waltrip and an owner of a cup car in Tony Stewart, our most popular driver for years and the champ of our fathers with with Elliot. So, yeah, this thing is really brewing. And then there was also some other altercations talking about Richard Childress as one of the owners and the fact that he was an idiot and he didn't know what was going on. It was all because of NASCAR that he made his fortune. So this thing's going to get pretty dicey and pretty spicy. So we'll talk a little bit more in a little more detail on the actual merits of the lawsuit and the fact that they're going to trial next week. And I'm not really sure exactly what's going to happen in this situation, but we'll find out very, very quickly. And brewing for several months after he did a test at Indianapolis, but the headline reads, Schumacher to race in IndyCar with Rahal Letterman Racing. Well, Mick Schumacher is headed to the IndyCar Series as the newest driver for Rahal Letterman Racing. The son of seven-time Formula One World Championship Michael Schumacher tested for Rahal Letterman in October at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on road course, and both parties left the introduction event with the intent to formalize the relationship that would bring the 26-year-old to Rahal Letterman and IndyCar. I think I speak for everyone at Rahal Letterman when I say how thrilled we are to welcome Mick to the team and to IndyCar, said co-owner Bobby Rahal. His test with us on the Indianapolis road course was exceptional. He impressed every single member of our team. Everyone walked away from that event determined to bring Mick into our program, and we're thrilled he has chosen to join us, and we can't get to work fast enough. Now, with the announcement of Schumacher's exit from the Alpine WEC Hypercar program last Thursday, the Swiss-born German driver completed his deal with Rahal Letterman, which formally switched the IndyCar driver to drive the number 47 car, and he is going to join the team in 2026. So very excited for young Schumacher, Mick Schumacher, to come to IndyCar and show everybody what he can do as a former Formula One driver and World Rally, and as well as a supercar driver, and should be pretty fun as he starts out his journey in IndyCar 2026. Well, from the pages of The Drive, the article says, the Honda Passport wave is a thing, and I'm thankful for it. It's Thanksgiving Day, and I'm supposed to be giving thanks for something, right? Well, because we're a car blog, I'm going to give thanks for a trend that I've just discovered. As a part of the Drive's first long-term car review, I've been driving a 2026 Honda Passport Trail Sport around Indianapolis for a few months now, and I've discovered a couple things that I didn't know more about this vehicle. Yes, it is the Passport Wave, and it is a thing. Well, the first time I was waved at, I was genuinely confused. I didn't know the person. They didn't know me. Or did they recognize me from the site? It's a rare thing for local guys to spot me in test cars with manufacturer plates or honk or wave at me. But this passport is just plain old Illinois plates. So I'm just sure the person noticed that I was driving a passport, and it didn't occur to me at first. Then it happened again. This time it was much clearer. A fellow passport driver not only waved, but flashed his high beams at me a couple times. And I thought, well, how cool is that? From then on, I expected a wave every time I drove by another passport, and I also began waving to them myself. And I am happy to report most of them waved back, and it made me smile. Now, of all the cars I've driven over the decades of doing this for a living, this wave thing, I thought had only been reserved for Jeepers and maybe a super rare Ferrari or something like that. I didn't know that this vehicle, what I would consider a group of normal car owners, would start waving at each other. So think about it, and it makes sense. The Passport truly stands out as a unique design, attitude, despite its being in a crowd-pleaser segment of the rugged crossovers. I've seen plenty of Subarus and other wagons and SUVs with cult-like followings, but they don't wave to each other. So if you see me or another Passport on the road, and you drive a Passport, wave at them. It'll make their day. We should all be so grateful. Well, as a guy who drives a C7 Corvette, the C7 Corvette guys wave at each other as well. So the wave is kind of a little, hey, you're in the club, I see you, you see me, and we're all having a lot of fun driving these cool cars. In unusual automotive news, the headline reads, FBI seizes Mercedes-Benz CLK GTR valued at $13 million. Well, I've read about some pretty car raids where the government swoops in and seizes all kind of high-dollar assets, but this one might take the cake. United States FBI is a proud new caretaker of a 2002 Mercedes-Benz CLK GTR Roadster valued at $13 million. It was commandeered as a part of what FBI is calling Operation Giant Slalom, an investigation that went into former Olympian and current top 10 fugitive Ryan Wedding. What led the feds to do this is anyone's guess, but you might remember that the CLK GTR is a special car that enabled Mercedes-Benz and AMG to go racing back at Le Mans in the day. With images of this car bombing down the racetrack burned into my brain, most of these road-going versions were squirreled away by collectors. Mercedes made only 28 of these in total, and from what we can find, 20 were coupes, 6 were roadsters, and 2 were prototypes, this being the roofless example, the Roadster, and still arguably worth more than any one of these cars still in existence. Now, under the hood, amid its mid-mounted 6.6-liter V12, sends power to the rear wheels with a 6-speed sequential gearbox. The engine is rated at just shy of 600 horsepower while spinning at 7,000 RPM, which makes a glorious sound. Now, the FBI seized the CLK from Wedding's organization, which involves a huge network of individuals believing to assist the former Canadian snowboarder in drug trafficking as well as money laundering. Wedding is believed to be hiding out in Mexico, and Washington, D.C. officials have compared him to the likes of, well, El Chapo Guzman and Pablo Escobar. According to the Attorney General Pam Bondi, he controls one of the most prolific and violent drug trafficking organizations in the world. It's reported that his multinational operation is responsible for $1 billion in illegal drug trade and their proceeds annually, making a $13 million collector car a drop in the bucket. Wow, this is seriously nuts. So, first time I've heard about this guy being a drug lord, and the fact that his very cool car, a very unique car, is now the property of the FBI. Season for local car shows, and on December 6th, that's next Saturday, is the Leisure World 5K Santa Run and Car Show, open to all classic cars, trucks, sports cars, and motorcycles. And that's going to be at Leisure World, which is at 908 Power Road, and from 7 a.m. until noon. Go check that out. That could be a lot of fun if you're over in the East Valley. It's right around the corner for you. So that's next Saturday, December 6th, 7 a.m. to noon at Leisure World, which is located at 908 South Power Road, for their car show and fun run. Well, time to talk a little gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $3. That's right. Now, if you look here in greater Arizona, our gas prices average price is $3.30. Our friends over in New Mexico, quite a bit less, $2.72. Up in Colorado, $2.56. Utah, $3.07. Nevada, $3.73. California, $4.56. As you head to the east, over in Texas, $2.57. Oklahoma, $2.41. And that looks like that's probably the least expensive gas. I'm just searching here. Yep, that's pretty much the cheapest gas in the country, our friends in Oklahoma. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in the great state of Arizona. Well, the cheapest gas in the state right now is at Costco in Tucson, $2.59, and that's on Tucson Marketplace. The Pilot Station on Travelway Plaza at $2.59 in Tucson as well. Walmart on Commerce Center Drive in Tucson is at $2.59. The Arco Station on Irvington, $2.62. So it looks like if you're looking for some cheap gas, well, Tucson looks like your best choice. Oh, the 76 station in Casa Grande at $2.67. The Eloy Loves Travel Stop at $2.69 as well. So Tucson, Eloy, Casa Grande, if you're looking for cheap gas, that's where it is. All right, let's talk Phoenix gas prices. Well, we did find some gas under $3. The Fry's on Old West Highway out in Apache Junction, $2.99. And the Quick Trip on Old Highway Old West Highway is at 299 as well, and the Marathon Station on Apache Trail at 299. So if you're in the Far East Valley, Apache Junction's got your cheap gas. Sam's Club in Gilbert at 304. Sam's Club in Tempe at 305. The Costco in Glendale on 79th Avenue at 305. The one in Queen Creek, the Costco in Queen Creek at 305. And Sam's Club in Gilbert and in Phoenix. Phoenix location on West McDowell at 308. So if you have a Sam's Club card or a Costco card, looks like you have the best opportunity to get the least expensive gas in the city. Well, it's that time, folks. It's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, I'm getting older, and I've now become a snowbird, and I head south for the winter for 4 months every year. My question is, should I put my car on jacks to save the tires while I enjoy the warm sun? And that's from Keith. Well, Keith, I don't think you need to worry about your tires while you're enjoying the warm sun. I think you should worry about using some sunscreen and staying hydrated, and possibly your AC bill. Your tires, they'll be just fine. Now, ages ago, when we used bias ply tires, those tires were prone to flat spots if they sat for a long time. Essentially, the tires would get misshapen, and for a long time, or maybe forever, you'd drive around hearing the thump, 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 thump every time the wheel rotated. Now, in those days, it might have been prudent to put your car up on blocks if you were going to leave it for 4 months. But in the decades, in the last 5 or 6 decades, cars have used what are called radial tires. And radial tires have layers of material running perpendicular to the direction of travel for the tires. They have all kinds of advantages: better handling, better mileage, greater comfort, and longer life. Now, another advantage that is the flat, if you do get a flat spot in a radial tire, it's only temporary. There is a nylon layer in the radial tires that heats up as you drive the car. And in very cold weather, or if the car sits for a very long time, after it's driven, that nylon belt will come in contact as the contact patch and can cool down and could form a flatter spot. But even when that happens, or if that happens, it will regain its proper shape very quickly once it's been driven, usually in 15 or 20 minutes at the most. So unless you're driving a 1961 Buick Roadmaster with original bias ply tires, there's absolutely no reason to think about your tires until you get back. What you do want to do is just check the tire pressure, make sure they're correct, and drive. Yeah, tire pressure is critical to making sure your tires are operating properly, and certainly bias ply tires are no good. We actually had a customer who had a Camaro with the old bias ply tires, and the car drove poorly because of those tires. Put a new set of radials on it, she drives like a dream. Well, that's all the time we have for the Car Show today, folks. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.